allow the reading from Proverbs 12, verse 4. A wife of noble character is her husband's crown, but a disgraceful wife is like decay in his bones.
Good morning. If you have your Bible and would like to be turning to Proverbs chapter 31, Proverbs chapter 1 will be in verse 18 through 23 this morning. Proverbs 31, verse 18 through 23.
Preach the word, brother.
Last week, we started this sermon that I wish that we had time to preach all in one lesson, but this is part two, and next week will be part three, so we're just going to try to shave it down in length a little bit. But just to remind you how we got started in Proverbs 31, verse 10, it says, "An excellent wife who can find," and reminding you that the word excellent means strength or force. And we went on to discuss that an excellent or a strong woman was had worth that was far above rubies. She had her husband's trust. She did her husband good. She went out and worked with her hands, gathering wool and flask. She fed her family and was pictured to be a merchant ship in some ways. She arose while it was still night to feed her family. She went out and bought a field with her earnings. Verse 17, she ultimately girded herself with strength and makes her arms strong. So that's where we was at last week. Just wanted to make a connection to where we're going this week because it's certainly part of the text. I heard a lot of discussion this week about how many cows you ladies were worth. So that must have been a good illustration. Coincidentally, I didn't know this, but my illustration came from a movie called Johnny Lingo that you can get. I went and watched it on YouTube. It's a really good show. If you want to get that and look at that, that'd really be worth your while. I spent a lot of time trying to pour over some kind of illustration for beginning today's sermon, because when you... It's hard to follow an 8-cow sermon, you know. I did a lot of thinking about it, and I thought, you know, where this sermon ends today is really where I'm going to begin, and I want to talk to you just briefly about my grandma, Algie. O-L-G-I-A, Algie. My mother's mom. When I was growing up, and still in my mind, I have never met a woman, I don't think, that surpasses her godliness as a woman. When I was growing up, my grandma was pretty neat. She was out gardening all the time, canning. How many people in here has ever canned? Not any of us younger folks, anyway. Man, she made the best pickled beets this side of Georgia. You know, she was always doing something, canning green beans, squash, all this stuff. She was a working woman. She did it kind of out of necessity and kind of out of love, because you know what? Grandma and Grandpa were really, really poor. Okay. But that wasn't the only thing Grandma was good at. I seen Grandma mow the grass. I seen Grandma knit a quilt. I seen Grandma make dresses, mend my pants. Grandma's the one that taught me how to say the Lord's Prayer. Made me memorize it. I fought her all the way, but I did it. Grandma was strict with us. Grandma was the only grandparent that ever busted me. What does that mean? She loved me.
Right.
Well, I want to tell you about Grandma real quick, because I want to tell you that Grandpa was another matter, okay? Don't mean to be disrespectful to my grandfather, because I did love him, but I want to share with you the truth to accentuate a point about my grandmother. My grandpa was a harsh, bitter man. He had been married married, his wife had cheated on him, and he carried that bitterness. They got divorced, and he married my grandma, and he carried that bitterness with him through the rest of his life. The whole time I knew him, every night he'd get drunker than a skunk. And Grandpa was funny when he was drunk, so I didn't really care as a kid too much. But you know what? He was really harsh and ugly, especially to Grandma. I cringe when I think about just how harsh my grandfather was to my grandmother. He would cuss her like a sailor and treat her with the most horrible of indignities. But I want to tell you how my grandmother responded to that. My grandmother never once said a bad thing about my grandfather. As a matter of fact, my grandmother always pointed out his good attributes, which were kind of hard to find. No matter how hateful Grandpa was to her, she loved him in return. He was probably one of the worst family leaders that this world has ever seen, but my grandmother honored him. Now there's a noble, excellent, virtuous wife. Much of who I am today comes down to me from the influence of a godly grandmother who honored her husband with all of her heart. The strength and the power of a godly wife goes beyond a lot of times what we see around us here in this world. God has given all of you ladies a strength that you need to tap into. You know, I was thinking as I was studying through this, and I'm conscious of time, but I just got to say this. I was wanting to turn over to that chapter that talks about a noble husband, and I couldn't find it. Now, I'll just leave you with that. But you know what? There's a lot of women, especially in this church, that are noble and virtuous. And I praise God for that. Amen. Verse 18 is where we'll get started. She senses that her gain is good. The word senses here in the Hebrew is the word for perception. Perception is the way that we look at things and understand the things that are going on around us. The strong wife sees things in a positive light. She is careful not to be drugged down by negative thinking or feelings of despair. This is why, or where some ladies get into trouble, because, you know, taking care of a family is an enormous responsibility. Us men probably know it more so than anybody, because as we look at our wives, we see them going every which way trying to accomplish all the things that the ladies do. But this strong wife, she takes great labor in making the best of what she has. She looks for the potential in things. She sees the possibilities surrounding her. I remember my grandma, she would save scraps of clothes in a bag, and I thought it was for grease rags, right? Grandpa says, "Go give me a rag." Okay, I'm going. I go in there, and I know there's a bag in there with scraps of clothes, and I start getting that. Grandma's like, "Whoa, no, use these. What's this bag for?" "I'm going to make a quilt out of that." Grandma didn't throw anything away. She always saw the possibilities in it. A strong wife does that. She doesn't see her glass as half empty. She doesn't even see it as half full. A strong, godly woman knows that her cup is overflowing in the Lord. And she operates from that vantage point. The text goes on here in verse 18 to say that her lamp doesn't go out at night. When the family is fast asleep and a mix of silence and snoring is heard, many times the godly woman is up late taking care of her family, trying to meet those responsibilities, trying to meet those needs of her family. When I think about burning midnight oil, working the late shift, I'll tell you this. The only way I'm working the late shift is if I'm forced to do it. You talk to my previous employers, Dan did not volunteer for the night shift because sleep is really important to me. You know what I'm saying? I had to be forced. But a godly wife is not forced at all. She's not forced to do it. She is committed. This godly, strong godly wife, she doesn't do it because she has to, but she does it because she's determined to do it. Because she's committed in her heart. You know, when you're committed to something, it doesn't matter what the clock says, right? I want to remind you all of that when I run a little bit late here in just a little bit, okay? She's willing to give up what's precious to her to help her family succeed. Does that remotely remind you of anybody? Say, Jesus? Jesus is willing to give it all up. You know what? A strong wife puts herself last and puts everyone else in front. Failure to a strong, godly wife is no option. A godly wife is going to do, I'm not saying that she doesn't struggle, but she's going to do whatever it takes to make her family succeed. So a strong, godly wife looks for the best in all things and strives with diligence to make it all happen. And you know, sometimes I wondered, looking back, how Grandma made it all happen because she didn't have anything to work with hardly. But she did. She must have been pretty hooked up with the Lord, right? Well, she wasn't just maybe. She was a strong, godly woman. Verse 19 goes on to talk about the fact that the strong, godly woman is a hard worker. It says she stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. Now, this is all part of the weaving process in making cloth, okay? Not only has this strong lady went out and gathered the wool and the flask for making the wool, but now she's reaching out and spinning the cloth and doing all that with her hands. She didn't go down here to the fabric store. Do we have a Hancock fabric store? Okay, that's the big fabric chain. She didn't go down to the Hancock fabric place and get a bolt of material. This lady sat down and spun it and made her own material. When I think about this strong woman so far, I ask myself, when does she get a break? Okay, all you women can answer me. When does she get a break? They're all shaking their heads. She doesn't get a break. The truth is, most of the time, she's the one out there dedicating all of her time, working her fingers to the bones. That's what godly women are about, but not because they have to. But they do it because it's a labor of love. This lady doesn't make herself out to be a princess placed on a pedestal to be served. She doesn't view things in that way. But this lady girds her waist with a towel like Jesus did in John chapter 13, and she serves people. That's what this godly woman's about. Putting other people's interests ahead of her own, she is the prime example of Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4. This godly woman is characterized by the word work. She's not lazy. And she is not idle by any means. But she is one dedicated gal. As we might say in the South, she's a go-getter. Have you heard that expression? She's one of these girls that's going to make things happen. Are you wondering where this type of resolve comes from for a woman? Hey, I'm thinking, during my study, as I'm studying this, I'm thinking that some of us men could want to set some of these standards for ourselves as well. You know what I'm talking about? You wonder where this strong woman's, where that resolve comes from to do this? This strong woman knows that her work is committed to the Lord. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 23. She's not working ultimately for herself or even ultimately for her family. a strong, godly woman, her work is unto the Lord. That's where her strength is rooted. Her service is dedicated to God. Verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. In the last verse, 19, and in this verse also, we see her, the strong woman, stretching out her hands. When you stretch out your hands, what's one thing that happens, the most obvious thing? Your hands are going out and away from yourself, aren't they? A godly woman, she's learned the lesson of Matthew 16:24 to deny herself. She's also learned what Paul talks about in Philippians chapter 2, to put other people's interests ahead of your own. And this woman, you see her time and time again reaching out. She's taking care of other people. Her attention is not focused on herself, but she's reaching out to others, and she looks around and she says, you know what? I'm going to help the needy people. This godly, strong woman, she's not just going to take care of her own family, but she is also going to take care of other people that can't help themselves. And you know what? I bet you in most cases that a godly woman will go without a meal and give her meal away. Isn't that the kind of women we have, guys? A lot of times, that's the heart of a woman. That's the heart of God. When the woman does that, she's modeling the heart of God. She reaches out to the poor and needy. In helping those beyond her home, we see in her a heart attentive to the needs around her. She's always on the lookout for people's needs, not willing to turn a blind eye. You know how it is. When you go to Walmart and you walk past that guy sitting there ringing the dinger, talking, you know, you've been in Walmart 3 times already because you keep forgetting stuff. And that guy's ringing that dinger over here, and you go in this door. Don't have time to fool with it. I'm busy. I got all this going on. My wife? No. Come on, buddy, let's go over here. I'll give $1 again, or I'll give $2. She's that way all the time. Me, I'm sitting there a lot of times justifying my mind. Well, I give last week, or I ain't got time. A strong, godly woman's not like that. She's always thinking about the needy. Isn't that what we need to do, church, as a people? Isn't that who Jesus was? Strong, godly wife is certainly that. She has a heart of compassion. A heart of compassion. You know, compassion doesn't come out of judgmental thinking. See, when I go down here and I go to the store and there's some guy out front with a sign that says, "We'll work for food," and he doesn't want to really work, he just wants you to give him money, and that's my perception, and I'm like, you need to go do something, you know. My wife, well, you know what? Maybe he lost his job. She's seeing it in a different way. She's seeing, she has compassion. Church, have we lost our compassion? Let's take a side note here. Have we lost our compassion to a certain degree? Has this world created some thinking in us that maybe we need to get rid of? I suggest so. And you know what? We might just look to some of these ladies who do it so well. Well, a strong wife prepares her family well. Verse 21. She's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all of her household are clothed with scarlet. This lady, she's not afraid of the driving snow and the cold and anything like that. You know why she's... Fear is the key word when we read this passage. You know why she's not afraid? Because she's made the necessary preparations and she's ready for it. She can sleep while the storms of life blow because she has actively spent time thinking about the need, planning for the need, preparing for the need. And when the need comes up, guess what? She is ready. That's why when the snow blows, that her heart has no fear. Coupled with the fact that she placed her trust in God. It says, for all of her household are clothed with scarlet. You know, there's several different ideas about what the text is saying here, okay? When it talks about being clothed with scarlet. But I think in context here, as we read this, red is opposite of white. The snow is white. And he mentions that her family is clothed with scarlet. Red, not purple. Some commentators get a little sideways on that. Red. I think it means to do with warmth and safety as in regard to the context here. She's taking care of her family. That's what strong godly women do. Then in verse 22, a strong godly wife makes herself honorable. That's an interesting thing. Let's read it. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. I believe that there are two things going on in this passage, okay? First of all, in this passage, she's making coverings for herself. She's made clothing for everybody else in the family, right? Now she's making clothing for herself. Now I want to talk to you ladies for just a minute about taking care of yourself. Okay? Now, before you cringe, I already saw a cringe or two, like, what's he going to talk about? Here's exactly what I'm going to talk about. If you don't take care of yourself, you ain't doing the family no good. If you're going to be a martyr, you know, martyrs, people really think, oh, wow, that person gave up their life for a cause. You know, all martyrs have one thing in common. They're not around anymore. Take care of yourself. Emotionally, physically, make time for yourself. If you're not making time for yourself, if you're not maintaining a healthy balance of life, you are not being good for your family. So, make yourself a dress, or take care. You remember the old commercial, Calgon, take me away. I want to encourage you women. So in this verse, I see potential. I see, first of all, that a strong godly woman makes time for herself. That's a part of health of anyone. Health of her and health of the family. The second potential in this text is the context itself when it says that her clothing is fine linen and purple. Now, with a little bit of biblical study, you can quickly come to the point that royal families wore purple. Purple was the most expensive color. And here it is mentioned, and it says that she clothes herself with fine linen. Well, what if you can't afford to do that? Does this verse saying that strong godly women need to go out and buy the best, what brands? Armani? I don't know. You pick your... Does this mean that a strong godly woman is dressed to the hilt with fine diamonds and dresses and all this? I think if you understand it to say that, you're out of bounds of what it's talking about. I think what it's getting to here is that a strong godly woman has placed herself in a position of honor by what she has done in life. This woman hasn't had to make application for an honorary title. She deserves it because she has earned it. You know the old adage, if you make your bed, you'll sleep in it? Hey, the position that you are in life is because you've earned it. Now you might say this, I'd like a little better position. Work a little harder. Isn't that true for even men and women? It is true. But the strong godly wife has earned her honor. Now, I saved my time. I got 10 minutes. Here's the biggie. This is the last point of the day, and it's 3.5 pages long. I can do it. A strong wife lifts up her husband. Verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Here the city gates are mentioned. The city gates, first and foremost, is the most public of places. It is generally the hub of the city, a place of business, a place of meeting, a place of strength. And the text here says that her husband is known at the city gate. I want to ask you, how is he known? All you women, I want you to help me answer this. How is the husband known at the city gate? Part of the reason he's known is because of things he chooses to do or not to do. But here in the context, it ain't talking about that. This guy is known because his wife has helped make him known. Okay? The strong wife understands what Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 7, where it says that the wife is to be the glory of her husband. She's to be the honor of her husband. That is the strong woman. She lifts her husband up. And I think about my grandma. Lifting grandpa. Now, grandpa's really heavy. I'm not talking about fat-wise. I'm talking about the way he had lived. He was a harder person to lift up, right? But she still lifted him up. Pointing out their good qualities. The strong woman praises and honors her husband. The strong, godly wife doesn't go around running down her husband, telling everybody about how she disagrees with some choice her husband has made. Some things you just need to keep to yourself, right? You don't go around, godly woman, yeah. Did y'all catch that? I did a translation there. A godly woman lifts her husband up, even if he's the world's biggest knothead. Now, I can tell you that we have a few knotheads in our congregation, because I'm one of them. So certainly I have some company. I want to suggest something about godly wives, okay? In many ways, a godly wife is a greater testimony of who the husband is than of the husband's testimony of himself. If you really want to get to know a guy, and you really want to know what he's all about, what do? Talk to his wife. Right? A strong godly wife realizes the power of praise and honor. She encourages her husband to grow. She tries to help her husband become more than what he is. One of the greatest ways that a woman brings honor to her husband is by understanding that he is the God-appointed head of the family. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 23 says that the husband is the head of the wife. Now, I just want to tell you something. I prepared this statement. I'd like to make it right now, okay? From this good old boy's perspective, okay? I'm just a farm boy, country boy. I'm just kind of take things easy, you know. Here's how I see it. One of the most disgraceful things I have ever seen in this world is a wife who chooses to disgrace her husband by not following his leadership. who rides roughshod over all of his decisions. I have seen Christian women, their husband asks them to do something, and they say, no, I'm not going to do it, go a different way. That is the most ungodly thing. From my vantage point, wonder what her husband thinks. Does he feel praised? Does he feel honored? Or does he feel squashed like a bug in a rug? It's the second one, by the way. Squashed like a bug in a rug. Disgraceful. But more than understanding the husband is the head of the household is needed. God's direction includes submission. Oh no, the dreaded word. You know what? It's not a dreaded word. When I was a young preacher, a couple years ago, I used to get a little antsy when I mentioned submission. I don't get antsy anymore. Submission's not a bad thing. Ephesians 5:22 says, wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. Well, what would leadership be without anybody to follow, you know? Can you imagine a chief without any Indians? I'm an Indian, by the way, so no bad thing about Indians, but submission in so many ways has been given a black eye by our world today, and it should not. But here's some of the reasons why. Sometimes men think about submission in this way. Get in your place, woman. I'm going to use force to put you in your place. Some men in this world think that. And then submission has also been abused by some women who says, you're not going to tell me what to do. You don't got any authority over me. It's two totally unholy thoughts. That's not what submission is about. Submission is a beautiful thing. I got 4 minutes. I'm headed there. Submission, here's why submission is a great and wonderful thing. First of all, submission is a middle voice verb in the Greek. What does that mean? It means that it's what you do to yourself. Submission is not forced upon you. And ladies, if you feel that submission is forced upon you, you need to change your attitude because that's not what God had intended. Submission is something that you willingly, with pleasure, take it upon yourself to do. Isn't that pretty cool? That changes the whole scene, doesn't it? Submission, 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 13, is for the Lord's sake. I'm just going to submit to my husband so that we can make something happen, so all the pieces can fall into place. I'm not going to just submit to my husband so that he'll be happy with me. Hey, ultimately, I'm going to submit to my husband because of God. And because it's His design and it's what He wants me to do. And I'm going to do that to please Him. Not only that, submission can win over an ungodly husband. Okay? 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 1 says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won over without a word by the behavior of their wives. There's power in submission, and we think, wait a minute, that goes a little bit opposite to my thinking. Well, that's because the thinking's wrong. God gives great power to it. Submission is a force. Ladies, submission is a potential energy, depending on if you choose to use it or not. 1 Peter chapter 3 goes on to talk about, connect the idea of submission with the idea of beauty. Some external look is not what God's after, but it's a measure of heart given over to faith in God. That's what is pleasing to God. Submission is also connected to one of the greatest cornerstones of our faith. Submission is connected wholly to the idea of humility. And God demands humility from us. Submission also includes the idea of respect. When you go to Ephesians chapter 5, you're reading about the husband and the wife. It starts in verse 22, but by the time you get down to verse 23, the wife who has submitted to her husband in the Lord respects her husband. I've heard women say, well, my husband's not respect worthy. or my husband's not submit worthy. If you say that as a lady, you need to check your whole card. God never said the man had to be worthy of it. He just asked you to do it. And I can tell you, even from my own family, in times past, Charity has been submitting to me even when I didn't deserve it. And that helps shape me more in a godly direction. James 3:17 includes submission as an integral part of heavenly wisdom. James 4 and verse 7 says submission basically has its roots in faithful trust of God. I thought of it in this way. Submission is really a golden gate for a noble wife. A noble wife is not offended by the word submission. Now, our world today, when's the last time you heard a news segment on TV about submission of wives? Never. That's okay if you admit it. Never. Godly women don't look at submission as a negative thing. You know why? Because godly women understand that submission is not just a thing limited to wives. Submission is something that we're commanded to do to each other. Submission has boundaries. It has big boundaries. It includes all of us when we have submission to each other. A godly wife ultimately makes her husband known at the city gate among the elders of the land. That is, a godly wife has treated her husband in such a way that he is welcomed among the elders of the land at the city gate. She is a part. All of you godly wives out there, you should understand that you are a part of how everyone in this world sees your husband. God calls you to honor your husband. Okay, 31 minutes. Let me close with this statement. This guy that I have no clue who is, Vance Havner, wrote this statement, and I'm just going to say it. Some women have made fools out of men, and some women have made men out of fools. You have a choice. Ladies, you have a choice whether to be a crown of thorns or a nice crown for your husband. We're going to have this invitation song, and I want you to ask yourself something, because one thing's been pretty impressive as we went through this, this whole series. People really got to thinking about their relationships at home, and they've realized how important this idea is. Lots of responses, okay? I want you to ask yourselves, ladies, I want you to ask yourselves, have I honored my husband? Have I been my husband's glory? Have I lifted him up? Have I honored him before God? Or have I said, well, he's not worthy? Or maybe later. If you need to make a direction change, good time for it this morning, okay? How you do that is admitting where you failed, okay? Now that's for the late. Now, I want to tell you guys something. Now, I can talk really good about this side because I know this side. The guys. Maybe you've been a knobhead that's made it hard for your wife to submit. You know when men are knot-headed, turkey birds, ornery scoundrels, it makes it really hard on that. Maybe some men need to come forward this morning and say, you know what, I've made it hard on my wife, and I want to do a better job. The invitation is yours this morning. I pray that God will bless any decision you make as we stand and as we sing. Thank you.